We're going to talk a little bit more individually about the players above this. There was quite a struggle between number 6 and number 5 on the list. Again, fittingly, just like 10, 11, 12, a struggle to get into the top 10, struggle to get into the top 5. This is going to be an interesting one because you had two very different schools of thought on this next gentleman. One school of thought is represented by the three of us here. The other school of thought is represented by the four who are not here, who are the balloters. Oscar Robertson with 356 points. He was 9 back of Wilt Chamberlain at 365 for 5th place, but Oscar had 356. Here's what the three of us said. I put him 2nd, Steve put him 1st, Chris put him 3rd. Here's what the other four guys did. Ron and Dave put him 9th, Ben and Jason had him honorable mention. So quite a spread between them. Two things I'm going to bring up about Big O. One is, again, this was one of the things from the Simmons book, is he was, as a player, sort of like Vince Lombardi as far as how hard he was on those around him. We remember Lombardi fondly because he was a winner. Simmons says, hey, look, the fact that everybody around him kind of choked and, you know, couldn't play as well because they were so scared of him, the lack of people skills, is that something that's fair to judge him on? I didn't end up judging him lower because of that, but I can see where other people might. Because, you know, Michael Jordan, he did a lot of the same stuff. He called Will Perdue. He said, you should have been named Will Vanderbilt because you shouldn't be named after a good school like Purdue. But it seemed to be effective when Jordan did it. Jordan seemed to know what buttons to push. Oscar, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, was just a jerk to a lot of people, including teammates, and that may have hurt. The other thing is, Ben Chu points this out as a basketball historian, and I think this is very interesting. We remember him for the triple-double. For a season, and the great consistency of the 5 seasons of averaging out to that, and he was the most consistent high-level superstar of all time. And we remember that he won an NBA championship eventually with Kareem. But we don't, other than that, there are no real standout moments, and you can't even call it a triple-double a moment. More than anybody else in the top 10, this is a narrative-driven society we live in today, fairly or unfairly. Where's the Oscar Robertson moments? There just really aren't any relative to the other top players on this list. So I'm going to start with you, Steve. I know you're very passionate about the Big O. You and I did a segment previously where we highlighted your column and where you very effectively said there's no comparison between that. We already covered it in that segment about how Westbrook contrived to get his triple-double last year. But thoughts on the Big O, because you had him number 1 overall, and I know you're very passionate about him, as am I in a lot of ways.
Well, it's hard to talk about Oscar moments when, because of territorial drafting back then, he got stuck on the Cincinnati Royals. So not only was he lost in the national view, and of course the national view was nothing in the 60s compared to what it's become in the last 25 years, he was stuck on a pretty bad team. That's not Oscar's fault. So if you're looking for moments, I don't know, as an MVP, I think he won a couple of MVPs in the All-Star game, which actually meant something back then because everybody tried and it was a big deal. But you're right, I kind of agree with that, but to take him out, and look, I've done shows with Ben, I've done shows with Jason, I think it's a big gap to have Oscar at honorable mention. I think the reason he's 6th is because those guys did have him at honorable mention. To not have Oscar Robertson on the top 10 list of NBA players 30 years ago today or 100 years from now, I'm sorry, that's a gigantic mistake. So I don't give you moments. I give you seasons, Rick. I give you 5 seasons where he averaged a triple-double. This is unheard of. If someone did this today, they'd build a statue of him while he was playing. I mean, it's just so far beyond. Let me give you another thing. I read an article where, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, Oscar, in every year of his first 5 years, where collectively, you know, they say, oh, he only averaged a triple-double 1 year. Collectively, he averaged a triple-double for 5 years. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, in every one of those 5 seasons, every one, Oscar had more triple-doubles than the rest of the NBA.
Right.
Think about that. This is Babe Ruth stuff. Oh, Babe Ruth hit more home runs than every other team. This guy had more triple-doubles than the entire league combined. I mean, that's just so unfathomable. I don't know if people quite understand that. One other thing I'll say. In 2000, the Associated Press voted for the greatest players of the 20th century. These are the writers, right? The Associated Press. They ranked Jordan 1 and Oscar 2. In 2000, the National Association of Basketball Coaches voted for the greatest player of the 20th century. And that result was Oscar Robertson 1. So I'm taking the coaches over the writers. And you know the other things I mentioned in my piece, because I'll take my time now because I got less to say about Jordan and James. Jerry West said, Oscar was the greatest player I ever played against, period. It takes up a lot of ground. Now, that doesn't count after Oscar, you know, but I'm just saying, think of who Oscar, think who Jerry West played against. Every guy from the 60s and 70s you can think of. And that takes in a lot of ground. Wilt, it takes in everybody. Elgin Baylor, Russell, you know, think of all those guys. And the other thing, more recently in the 2013 interview, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said, I know everyone's talking about LeBron versus Michael. Oscar would have kicked both of their asses. Now, you can never say if that's true or not, but here's a guy who's one of the 10 greatest players of all time saying Oscar, now again, he got his championship with Kareem, so maybe Kareem has a soft spot for him, said he was better than LeBron and he was better than Michael Jordan. So I do think the conversation ends, in my opinion, if we're talking about the greatest NBA player who ever played, it ends with this guy averaged a triple-double of 5 seasons. People go ballistic of what Westbrook did last year, and they were like rigging it so he could get triple-doubles. And when they say 42 triple-doubles for Russell Westbrook beat the 41 Oscar had, Oscar's season was 80 games long. Westbrook's season was 82 games long. I wrote that article that you put up on Westbrook versus Harden versus Oscar. Really? Because there's no comparison? But if Oscar had two more games, do you think he might have had another triple-double? We'll never know, but you got to look at all this stuff in context. And really, when I was talking before about racism, my son is in his early 20s. When he sees Oscar talk, he goes, boy, Oscar sounds bitter to me, Daddy. And I say, yeah, but if there's one human being on the planet who has a right to be bitter, I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands of African-Americans who do, but if there's one basketball player, it's Oscar. If you saw the Black Hoosiers thing on ESPN, when Crispus Attucks, an old black school, finally won the city title 2 years in a row in Indianapolis, a racist town where he grew up, they didn't get nearly the trip around Indianapolis that all the white winners got. So this goes way back to high school. And through college in Cincinnati, Ohio, sorry, and then through the NBA in Cincinnati, Ohio, sorry. So I'll double again what I said before, because it's more about Oscar than anyone else, what he put up with. And I don't count what he did for the Players Association, and he was the president, and he started a strike, and he was the lead plaintiff in that big case. That doesn't count on a top 10 list, but understand big picture what this man did. As for Wilt, should I be quiet now, or should I jump on Wilt now, because he's my number two?
Well,
I'll leave it up to you.
Tell you what, we're going to get to those guys probably next. I want to say something briefly before I throw it to Chris, and that is, just to clarify with Ben, and again, by definition, right, I had Oscar number two, so by definition, I disagree strenuously with Ben and with Jason. The narrative thing is something he brought up as a historian as far as moments go, and he was speculating why other people don't tend to rate him as highly. For Ben and for Jason, I believe it was, and again, I don't agree with this, but it's defensible at least, is to say, I wonder how he would translate to today's game. It was a little bit of that with them. I disagree strenuously, but I just want to clarify, Ben wasn't ranking him down because of a shallow narrative kind of a thing. He was speculating as a historian why he doesn't get more run and the run that he basically deserves. So he disagreed, again, with me, as did Jason. And to a certain extent, listen, let's not spare Ron and Dave. They put him number nine also, too. We had them all top three, one, two, and three, the three of us did. So we disagree with all four of those guys. Chris, it was laid out pretty good, I think, by Steve there. Or what are your additional thoughts on the Big O?
Well, I can't really top that. I mean, clearly the three of us are the Big O fan club. I mean,
yes.
Rick had him two. I had him three. So any way you slice that, obviously our opinions of Oscar Robertson are that regardless, we three believe he's one of the top three players in NBA history. You know, my feeling is that you look at Oscar Robertson and his wizardry with the ball and triple and 5 seasons of averaging a triple-double, and can you just imagine what he would command in today's open market for contract? I mean, obviously, with salary cap and all the rest of that stuff, it'd be, you know, it'd be max deals every year. And I remember before LeBron James, the argument was always who was the best player of all time, you know, Michael Jordan or Oscar Robertson.
Right.
And then LeBron shows up, and suddenly now we've shifted, and you know, again, I think that just speaks to his greatness. Rick, when you talk about, you know, how does it affect his standing in terms of what people think of him, you know, look, he he has every reason, as Steve says, to be bitter based on, you know, his experience within, you know, American society and today, how he would be a massive star and you know, a social, you know, socially he would be, you know, celebrated versus when he played and he wasn't, other than by a very small group of individuals. But, you know, sometimes there are also, to answer your question, some people are just jerks, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know Oscar Robertson, so I'm not casting any judgment here. I mean, he may be who he is because of his experiences, and he may be who he is because of who he is. But to me, none of that's relevant. He's one of the best three basketball players of all time.
I would agree with that, and I always like to throw this out there as a piece of trivia. As a lifelong denizen of America's North Coast, who is the second player in this top 10 list? Obviously, there's LeBron, to play home games in Cleveland, Ohio. That would be Oscar Robertson. The Cincinnati Royals played a handful of home games, quote-unquote, in downtown Cleveland back in the day. So, interesting that he doesn't really register in Cleveland sports history in that way. You'd think it would be worth at least a little bit of a footnote, but the next time I hear somebody tell me they went to see Oscar Robertson play when he's in Cleveland would be the first. He never left a footprint here, even with those handful of games every year that he was doing for a stretch. I'm going to take the next three guys collectively because we're going to take the top two guys collectively as well. We can obviously talk about all these guys at whatever length. Fifth place, Wilt Chamberlain, 365 points. As I said, only 9 points above the Big O. A fairly narrow band of balloting on all of these guys with a few exceptions here and there. Wilt got a fifth place vote from me, six from Ron. Dave gave him an eighth place ballot. Steve, you put him second. Ben put him second. Jason put him 10th. Fourth place, Magic Johnson, 453 points. I put him 6th, Ron put him 4th, Dave put him 5th, Steve put him 8th, Ben put him 4th, Chris put him 5th, Jason put him 4th. A fairly narrow band of balloting, certainly for Magic. We all had a rough consensus there, more or less. Number 3, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the same can be said, 504 points. We all rated him pretty highly. I put him 4th, Ron put him 3rd, Dave put him 3rd, Steve put him 6th, Ben put him 6th, Chris put him 4th, and Jason put him 3rd. So three uber household names right there, as you would expect as we get higher up the list. So Steve, I'll start with you. I know you have some thoughts in general on Wilt, but certainly on the other guys as well.
Yeah, well, I'll go on Wilt first because I have him number 2. And while I agree with the Chris analysis on Shaq as the big man, I don't agree with that analysis vis-a-vis Wilt, and here's why. Wilt Chamberlain was a fantastic athlete. See, people, all you see now when you see Wilt highlights is really like him with the Lakers, where the Lakers coming up court, and he's coming up later, and he's heavier, he's out of shape, was still a very good player, but wasn't quite Wilt. And I'm just going to give you some quick stats. When Wilt came into the league, his first year he averaged 37 and 27 rebounds. His first year. His first 6 years he led the league in scoring. His first 4 years, he led the league in rebounding. Flash forward to now when he played the Lakers at the end of the year, when he was 35, 36 years old. He played all 82 games, and he led the league in rebounding all 3 years, averaging 18, 19, and 18 a year per game for those 3 years. This is a guy, you know the stories, he averaged 50 a game, he scored 100 in a game. When he was criticized for not passing, the next year he led the league in total assists. This is a guy who played 1 year at Kansas, and then he couldn't go to the NBA, so he played with a year with the Globetrotters, and that's how he really became a talented basketball player. You can find video from the late 50s and early 60s of Will getting a rebound, dribbling the ball down the court, and dunking. I mean, it's just, nobody understands what a great guy. He was a great triple jumper, was a great high jumper, he was a great volleyball player. So again, what we have today of Wilt is, well, you know, he's kind of slow, he's out of shape. You know, the only reason he averaged 30 a game is because his last 3 years, playing all 82 games, he averaged, this is with the Lakers, including the championship that he won with West, he averaged 20 a game, 14 a game, and 13 a game, and played full season. So really, as Wilt, he probably averaged 33, 34 a game. And here's the final thing I'll say about Wilt. Oh, also had 55 rebounds in a game against Bill Russell, the all-time record. But here's the final thing, and this is apocryphal, but according to Larry Brown, it happened, and I'll just read it out of the article I found. According to Larry Brown, UCLA coach at the time, Magic Johnson was playing against Wilt in the pickup game, and he, quote, called a couple of chintzy fouls in the goaltending on Wilt. So Wilt said, quote, no more layups in this gym. This is Larry Brown talking. And he blocked every shot after that. That's the truth. I saw it. He didn't let one of Magic's shots get to the rim. And the kicker, of course, is Wilt was in his mid-40s when this happened. So there's dominance. There's Shaq dominance. I'm a big, strong guy. But to me, there's Wilt dominance. I'm a big, strong guy who is as athletic as anybody on the court. That's why I vote him, too. I'll just quickly speak about Magic and Kareem because you guys have them higher than me. Kareem, very well, could be the greatest player of all time. The skyhook is the greatest shot ever invented. Magic, I love because he changed the game, 6'9", point guard. But the reason he's not higher on his list, as great as Magic was, not a great shooter. And I didn't think he was a great defender. He was a good defender. So that's why Magic and Kareem on my list versus this list are lower. And I've just explained, in my view, why Wilt was higher.
Well, I'll tell you what. A couple things I want to just mention before I flip it to Chris, because I didn't say much about... again, Wilt is a guy that I agree with a lot of what you're saying there as far as his ability to translate his game. Magic is a guy where... All you need to know about him is whenever the conversation comes to point guards, because you look at this list, point guard is the thinnest position on this list. We always say, who's the best other than Magic? He tends to get taken out of the equation here as a non-traditional point guard at 6'9 to change the game. He's always exempted from the discussion. You know, like, is John Stockton maybe the best, or Tiny Archibald, or whoever the case may be, aside from Magic? Just the fact that we put him aside kind of says a lot to me. Again, longevity, an issue with me. He might have been even higher, believe it or not, on my ballot, just like Bird, had he played a little longer. And Kareem, I think when I made my ballot originally, I think the thing I said about him is that winning times statistics, if you're going to do that as like a formula, he's probably number one overall. You add in the longevity. Kareem has a tremendous case to be very, very, very high on this list. Not surprising that he comes in at number three. So, Chris, your thoughts on those three guys?
Clearly, I have high regard for Magic and Kareem. Magic changed the game so many ways in terms of, I was about to say the same thing. We think of point guards, we think of Magic, and then we start to wonder, you know, who else? And you know, Magic being a guy who could play anywhere on the court.
Yes.
A lot like LeBron James. I mean, could just play any position on the court if you needed him to do so. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, I mean, listen, if Michael Jordan doesn't ever, you know, finally make his high school basketball team, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar might be the one we're talking about as the greatest of all time all these years rather than Michael Jordan. But luckily for the world, Jordan did finally make his high school basketball. So, you know, obviously I have them 5 and 4 on my list because I had Oscar at number 3. So there's just no way around the fact that, you know, those are 2 top 5 players of all time we have in this 3 and 4 on our list. I enjoyed Steve's discussion about Will Chamberlain. I was looking forward to sort of being chastised and schooled on the greatness of Will. Because Will is a player that I didn't give him a top 10 vote. He was certainly, had I done honorable mention votes, 10 honorable mention votes, he clearly, for me, would have been in that mix as well, you know, somewhere around 11 or so. And I acknowledge that the big struggle for me is not having a lot of tape on Will, not having a bias that I remember Wilt at the end, and he was still great at the end. He was still an excellent basketball player. I've always struggled with Wilt as a player because I look at when he came into the league and who he was playing against, you know, starting in 59, and the quality of the players. I always felt like, you know, this is a guy who was, it's almost like if there was time travel, was born well before he should have been, and was playing against Lilliputians and people that were just, you know, physically inferior, and almost like as if it was just, you know, totally unfair. You know, it's like Superman, you know, taking on, you know, the three of us in a boxing match. It's not fair. So I don't think you can totally discount what I say about that. Was he a great player? Yes. His ability, you know, you talk about the year when he led the league in assists because he was criticized, he wanted to make a point. Again, I think that also speaks to some of the poor quality of his competition. And probably also of the roster around him, where he was, in many ways, a lot like what LeBron has had to do and been able to do through the years in terms of the inferior, many of the inferior rosters that he's been surrounded by, especially with the Cavaliers. You know, it allows, I think there is a certain level of inflation of statistics when someone is sort of carrying, you know, the entire load for a team. You combine that with, you know, inferior competition. Again, does that mean that Wilt is still not probably a top 10 player of all time? Oh, I think his skill set is amazing, and yes, he probably should be. I acknowledge that I always have struggled with putting him so high because I look at that level of competition, late 50s through the mid-60s, and think, really? I mean, today? I mean, would he have the opportunity to be as dominant? And not that he couldn't be, but would he have even have the opportunity? So,
well, if I could just speak to Rick just briefly on Magic and Wilt.
Sure.
First on Magic, and again, I agree, changed the game, 6'9", point guard, lots of championships. The problem, though, that I would point out is when West played, when Oscar played, there was no point guard and shooting guard. These guys were incredible point guards,
right,
incredible shooting guards, excellent defenders, even West more so than Oscar, I would say. As for Wilt, yes, I agree with what Chris said about the caliber of the competition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But let me say this. The centers today are a joke compared to the centers when Wilt played. First of all, there's no Bill Russell, and Bill Russell played Wilt. Wilt crushed him statistically. Bill Russell won. That's why I think Russell would be fine today as well, because he was incredibly athletic, and there aren't that many good big guys anymore. But not only was Russell in the league, Nate Thurman. Nobody ever talks about Nate Thurman, top
right.
50 all-time player. Great center. Zelmo Beatty, less people talk about Zelmo Beatty. So I think Chris is right in terms of you showed up to play against the Knicks and were playing against Daryl Imhoff when he was the Knick and scored 100 points. I get that. But this is so another, I'll use Ruthian again for Oscar's triple-doubles more than the league and Wilt statistics over time. Ruthian, but yes, you're right. I'm sure there are games he showed up and said, I'm getting, you know, fill in the blank tonight. But even the year he averaged 50, he had to play against guys like Russell. And you played these guys a lot more than you play them today. He had to play against guys like Nate Thurman. He had to play against guys like Zelmo Beatty. And today, if he was in the league because of the three-point shot, I still think he'd be a great player because, again, you want dunks or threes. You don't want the mid-level jumper anymore. The mid-level jumper, Oscar was probably the greatest mid-level jump shooter of all time, averaged, you know, like 49% from the floor when the league average was 40.
Right.
Now people say, oh, he only averaged this or that. But hold it now. You got to look at what the league average was back then.
Right.
So I agree on the Wilt thing, but the notion that he would be out of a top 10, honorable mention, whatever, you know, just strikes. Now, everybody had him in the top 10, so I can't criticize. That's an Oscar argument. But again, you'd have to look at real early tape to see how athletic this guy was, and that would clearly translate to today.
All right, in our last few minutes here, let me jump in with the unified theory, which I think is he was unlucky from a historical perspective not to be born later, because then we could have seen and there wouldn't have been any question what he would have done against different kinds of competition. So I do sort of see both sides of the coin with what you guys were saying there. The fact that I had Wilt rated fifth on my ballot, I'm closer to where you're at on that one, Steve, but I see the other point of view as well. You look at the top two guys on this list, it's unsurprising. It's the debate that sort of kick-started this whole project in the first place. 619 points in second place, LeBron James. 662 points in first place, Michael Jordan. The ballots for each of them, for LeBron, I had him third, Ron had him second, Dave had him second, Steve had him fourth, Ben had him third, Chris had him first, Jason had him first, Michael Jordan, I had him first, Ron had him first, Dave had him first, Steve had him third, Ben had him first, Chris had him second, and Jason had him second. On my ballot for LeBron, because he seems to be the bigger debate point of the two. Jordan seems to, it always seems to be Jordan or somebody in the conversation here, and that the variable at the moment is LeBron, and where do you slot LeBron? And when I did my ballot, I said LeBron is a moving target. His career isn't over yet. He's on pace to have a longer prime than most guys generally have, which as an all-time great makes the case even stronger. I think I said if he wins two more titles, that would be double digits in the finals as far as appearances go. He never went out in the first round the way that Jordan did. It's a little easier to be 6-0 in the finals when you've lost on smaller stages earlier in your career, as Jordan tended to do. We remember LeBron's eliminations because they tended to be later in the playoffs. Five titles, double digits finals appearances, along with everything that he has done in terms of his all-around game, I think he probably, because of his physicality, surpasses Oscar Robertson as the best all-around player of all time as far as skill set goes, because having that mailman Malone body to add with the Oscar Robertson skill set gives that extra dimension. Almost unparalleled court vision among guys on this list, although in fairness, Larry Bird is a guy who's very underrated in that as well when we're talking about that. So my sense is LeBron's not where Oscar is yet. LeBron's not where Jordan is yet, but he just turned 33. You give it some time, he has a chance to become number one, not for another 3 or 4 years. Jason said on his ballot he thinks LeBron's already there. He doesn't even necessarily know that it's an argument. I certainly disagree with him on that. So I'll start with you, Steve. You were a little bit of an outlier here as far as having LeBron 3 and Jordan 4. You didn't have either of them in your top two. You're the one guy where that was the case. So I'll start with you before I throw it to Chris.
Well, I guess I would say I still have Jordan above LeBron for some of the reasons you just enunciated. But while I did point out 6-0 in the NBA Finals and 6-0 Finals MVP, again, you have to remember the context of the times. The East was terrible back then. He was beating Patrick Ewing and nobody. You know, whatever anyone thinks of Ewing, he didn't play with an all-star his entire career. They were beating Reggie Miller and the Pacers and nobody. So every year, to me, he had a clear way to the finals. And meanwhile, the West was beating each other up. And you remember, you know, the Jazz, of course, and Elijah Wong and the Rockets, and even Seattle with Sean Kemp and Gary Pett. I mean, there were some bomb teams in the West. So they used to beat each other up. My knock on Jordan, and I'll include this as a knock on LeBron as well, neither one was a very good three-point shooter. LeBron in his entire career has not even been an average three-point shooter. He's doing well this year. This might be the first year. But if you look at the stats vis-a-vis whatever really good three-point shooters are, and more importantly, what the NBA average is, LeBron has always been around 33%, and that leaves him behind. He's higher this year. Jordan as well. Jordan averaged 32.7% from three. The league average back then was lower, as again you would expect, because the 3-point came in the mid-late 80s. So Jordan was around the league average. But to me, and I've said this to my son numerous times, when LeBron James is consistently hitting his outside shot, he is the greatest player ever. As a player. I'm not talking about championship. As a player, I also have told him, they're not playing singles tennis in the NBA. So while Russell is the greatest winner, and I rank him very high, others don't, this isn't about one guy. Basketball is not a one-on-one game. So I give more credence to a guy like an Oscar who had to go play with Kareem. Would Magic have won all the titles he won if he didn't play with Kareem? I don't know. So my knock on them, big picture, is neither of them are great, great shooters.
That's
very
true.
Clutch players, et cetera. The other thing I'll say is Jordan never won anything without Pippen. And when I did say about LeBron, and I have Jordan 3 and LeBron 4, is essentially what you said, Rick, and that is this guy has taken some of the worst teams in history to the NBA Finals. So when you look at LeBron's long-term record in the Finals, you have to say, in my view, that he got teams who had no business being near the finals. They shouldn't have been conference champions, that early team in Cleveland that got swept, for example. So my view on LeBron is yours. Give him more time. See how many more championships he can win. But vis-a-vis him and Jordan as not the greatest players of all time, to me, if you're not a center, and as we've talked now, there used to be dominant ones, there aren't many now. If you're not a center, mate, you better be a real good shooter. When Durant goes up from three, you think he's making it.
Right.
When Curry shoots from three, you think he's making it.
Right.
I'm not comparing
right.
Curry to Jordan and LeBron. Durant has a chance to get there, but my point is, when LeBron goes up for a big three, you want him to shoot, and he still has not disproven that, although this year I think he's at the highest level of his career. So those would be more knocks, because everybody's picking them 1-2. I'm picking them 3-4 with Jordan on top. Those are the reasons why.
Right. Okay, in terms of LeBron, too, first team in Cleveland I agree with you on. Every other time he's been to the finals, Miami or Cleveland, though, it's been a big three team. So I agree with you on the first one. That was a carry job like what Iverson did in 0-1 with the Sixers. The other teams, he did have a lot of, maybe not depth.
Rick, a couple of years ago, he lost those guys, and they still won two games against Golden State. That was a miracle.
Okay, those guys were hurt. I do agree with that. That's an excellent point as well. I just meant as far as getting to the finals, but you're right about that. Chris, in our final minutes here, bring it home. Your thoughts on this. You were a guy that had LeBron at 1 over Jordan at 2 already at this stage in his career.
Yeah, and a lot of that is based on projecting, figuring he plays another 5 or 6 years, and where he'll be specifically. I'm not even going to focus so much on the finals number of championships. LeBron has carried 8 teams to the finals, which to me is amazing. Yes, he's only won 3 of them. You just referenced the fact that a couple of years ago against Golden State, you know, no Kevin Love, no Kyrie. And he should have been the MVP of that final, even though Cleveland lost. The fact of the matter is, in that final, he showed his greatness in terms of how far he carried that team and how close they were to upsetting Golden State in that first go-around in that finals. At that point, they had no business winning that thing, and they came close. And it was only because of LeBron. He got robbed, and he only didn't get the MVP because they didn't win, in some weird mentality that sports writers have that you've got to be on the winning team in order to win the MVP. I'm just looking at, how long their careers have been. LeBron has now played more regular season games, and when you start to look at their statistics, they're very comparable. LeBron does a lot more overall on the court than what Jordan did in terms of his versatility. Yes, they're both not the best shooters. When both Jordan and LeBron are on, they are just lethal. And I think over the next 5 or 6 years, LeBron, I think, will certainly distance himself in terms of his value to a team game, how he elevates his teams versus Jordan. It's true, Jordan didn't win anything without Pippen. If you put Jordan on that first Cavs team that went and lost to San Antonio, did that get to the finals? I don't know. I'm not convinced of that. I think LeBron is just such a Swiss Army knife and can do so much on the court, as much as I don't really am not a fan of him in terms of some of his off the court. And not that he gets in trouble, but the tweeting and all these different things he mentions on social media to try to quote unquote motivate teammates, or sort of occasional spoiled baby mentality that Jordan never would have had. I don't like any of that stuff out of LeBron. I mean, to me, it's just it just does scream that, like, hey, I may look like I'm 50, but I'm really a millennial. As you can probably tell, Steve, I'm not the biggest LeBron fan, but over time I've sort of been worn down by watching how he elevates a team and those around him in a way that I've never seen another player. I look at when LeBron went to Miami and you had that Cleveland team the next year, which was basically the same roster, then turn around and won like 11 games.
Right. Good point.
Without him. You want to know the value of it, are you telling me that LeBron was basically worth 50 games, 50 victories, basically?
Yep.
I mean, that's basically what he was worth. Has there ever been another player in the league that you would say, this guy is worth 50 wins to a team? I mean, you start to break it down, and the level of competition that he's playing against in terms of the quality of players is, the fact that he's never missed much time in terms of any kind of injury, never had a serious injury. It really is amazing. It truly is amazing. And it's, I think, only when he's done, like, say, in 6 or 7 years, we'll all look back and go, wow. Like, once the stat book is closed and we have the full story of who LeBron is as a player. I believe that these lists will become more about, you know, LeBron and then who's really number two, Michael or Oscar or Kareem. And that's why I voted the way I did.
I think that may very well be the case, and I'll leave it on this note here that, again, you and I, Chris, we've been able to see it up close for much of LeBron's career, aside from the unfortunate donut hole years in Miami, I would say, as a Clevelander, but we've been able to see it all up close. I remember before Game 4 in the Finals in 2015, you and I were texting about this. You were going to the game, and I said, man, if Steve Kerr just stays in that soma coma for one more game, we got this. I knew we had to take Game 4. We didn't. But we weren't going to blow a 3-1 lead, I'll tell you that. Only Golden State was going to do that in the Finals a year later. But it was really something, the job that he did carrying the Cavs to a six-game loss in 2015, as has been the job that you guys have done with this discussion today of the NBA top 10 players of all time, the lists that we did, and it ended up being 25 players overall on our list. I want to thank you both so much for being part of this, a very worthy FDH Lounge 11th anniversary segment. Steve Callis, thank you so much for being a part of this, lending your expertise to this, your thoughts, the ballot that you submitted, your thoughts today.
No, just fantastic to do this with you guys. It was a lot of fun. I think maybe there is a bit of a generation gap, maybe. maybe that's my fault. But I like those final comments by Chris on the top two, because he makes a good point, especially in terms of LeBron, who, yeah, he can go out tomorrow and guard the point guard, or he could guard the center. And that's really an incredible skill to have. We'll have to see. I hope we reconvene in, 5 years after LeBron retires, and we can do this again. But it was great to do this with you guys.
We'll do this again, and I'll make sure it's this grouping. It's the first time that I've put you two guys together here, but the FDH chessboard is awesome, and it is deep, and I can mix and match at will, I think, and have a great pairing, as was the case today. Chris has been a part of a number of pairings over the years as an original FDH Lounge dignitary, 11 years and counting. Thank you so much, as always, my man.
Thank you, sir. It was great, Steve. I look forward to doing it again.
Same here.
Excellent. We'll clip and save on that note, people. We'll revisit over a period of time, and I'll certainly put these guys together on some other subjects as well. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, being a part of this very special 11th anniversary mini episode number 950 in the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.